This week we take out two Sifrei Torah. One we take out Sefer Shmot and we read from the weekly parsha from Tetzaveh, but we also take out the second Torah and we read from Dvarim, Parshat Zachar. So being the Parshat Zachar is apparently more important than the regular Kriya, because this is arguably a Deraisa. So we will speak about Parshat Zachar, at least primarily, and then we'll come back into perhaps we'll try to come back into Shmot a little bit. And next Wednesday, I don't believe that there's a shir. Next Wednesday, you'll all be busy. So let's begin. So we're gonna look at first is Zachar itself, and let's read the words. Let's see what it is and exactly what the chiyuv is. The psukim say as follows: Zachor eis asher sa lecha Amalek b'derech b'tzeischem b'Mitzrayim. Remember what Amalek did to you on the way when you left Egypt. Or for some of you, Zachor eis asher sa lecha Amalek b'derech b'tzeischem b'Mitzrayim. Asher karcha b'derech, where they happened upon you along the way. Now I want to pause a second and just make an observation. The episode of Zachar, or the episode of the war with Amalek, happens in Sefer Shmot, and this is really the retrospective. So it's very interesting that what Chazal tell us of the obligation is the retrospective, but not the actual battle itself. They just as easily could have said, we should remember about Amalek, and therefore we should read the actual war. So, Asher Karchar B'derech, when they happened upon you along the way, Vayizanev Bicha Kol Hanecha Shalim Acharecha Vata Yef Yageya V'lo Yirei Elokim. Now that pasuk is really the difficult pasuk, just in terms of what it means. And there's all kinds of drashot on it. So I want to start with, at first, an attempt, just what do the words actually say? They happened upon you along the way. Vayizanev Bicha Kol Hanecha Shalim. Vayizanev is like a tale. But what it means over here is that there was the whole camp, the Israelite camp, marching in a direction. The Yizanev is the stragglers who were behind. The stragglers were the ones who were the most vulnerable. And it continues, and it stresses this, and it says, Kol Hanecha Shalim Acharecha, all of the weak ones who were behind you. Vata Yefi Yageya, and you were tired. How would you translate Yageya? Weary. And did not fear God. Now, on did not fear God, if you were to ask me what this simple pshat is, it sounds very much like it's talking about Klal Yisrael. Rashi goes out of the way to say, no, that this is talking about Amalek. So it says, remember what Amalek did to you, and then goes back. This is a machloket which is found in the Mechilta. Who does it go on? Who does it go on? Does it go on Am Yisrael? Or does it go on Amalek? As I said, this is a machloket. But I want to go back to what I said a couple moments ago. This is not the main parsha of where the war takes place. This is the parsha where Moshe goes and gives a retrospective. Just to finish it off, it says, When you finally get to the situation, you have the opportunity of entering the land and settling the land, everything else seems okay, then go after a search-destroy mission, go after Amalek. You also have a double language, Zachar, remember, and at the end, Lo Tishkach. That same double language you also have by Yosef, I'm sure somebody can say some kind of Purim Torah about this, because this was the Sar HaMashkim. It says, "Velo Zachar Sar HaMashkim Yosef v'yishkocheyu." You have the double over there of he didn't remember and he forgotten. By us, we have the opposite by Amalek. The mitzvah is to remember Zachar and Al Tishkach. So I'm just pointing out that it's very rare to have both of those languages together. By Yosef, it's even closer together than it is over here. Keeping in mind that this is Moshe's retrospective and saying, okay, remember, context is important. And by the way, that's a klal. In Sefer Devarim, context is important because Moshe is giving a speech. The Gemara tells us there's a machloket whether we learn smuchim or not. If you learn by juxtaposition of parshiot, there's a machloket generally, but when it comes to Mishnah Torah, when it comes to Sefer Dvarim, then everybody says that we learn smuchim. Why? Because this is Moshe Rabbeinu speaking, and over here, context is important. Immediately prior to this is a section which deals with dishonesty. Before I deal with it, come and actually read the psukim, I do want to make at least one observation. The battle of Amalek is, or let's put it differently, Amalek is empowered due to the fact that we as a community did not take proper care of those who were weakest within the society. Which means the weak ones, that's the Nechashalim, Zonei Vacharecha, they're the ones who were straggling, going behind, they're the most vulnerable. And we did not do the proper thing to protect them. So right there I'm going to say that and this is obviously the not obvious conclusion of Parshat Zachar. Generally, Parshat Zachar, people start reading it, you know, you have a knife in your teeth and let's go out and go wipe them out. Let's go take them out and kill them all. Over here, part of the conclusion has to be that a society is judged by the way that it treats its weakest. Over here, the weakest became the most vulnerable. When the weakest became the most vulnerable, they were attacked. So again, you have to think through within a camping, how do you set up a camp in a way that the weak, the old, infirmed are taken care of. So I'm just saying that as the first observation, leading me now to the second observation in terms of context, because the context, I think, is fascinating. And if you don't know it, like there's no way in the world to guess it. Immediately prior to this, it says, again, this is the end of Bamid of Dvarim Perikafe. Lo yelecha bikischa evin va'avin gdula ktana. Don't have two different weights. I mean, it's an old Jewish custom. You have one set of weights that you use when you buy, and another set of weights that you use when you sell. So the ones that you use when you buy are a little bit lighter than they should be, and the ones that you sell a little bit heavier than they should be. Lo yebi veitcha eifa ve'eifa gdula ktana. Even shlema v'tzedek yelach, eifa shlema v'tzedek yelach. Leman yarichu yamecha l'adamash Hashem l'kecha noten lach. It's also interesting as it goes back again to the land. You want to be in the land. You want to stay in the land. You need there to be honesty. And again, I'll point out that generally the ones who are most hurt by dishonesty is actually the poorer members of society. They're the ones who again become most vulnerable, which is why I see a connection. And then it gives a really strong sign off on this, much stronger than you would imagine. Ki to'avat Hashem Elokecha kol osa ele, kol osa avil. That anybody who's dishonest in business, anybody who practices these kinds of business practices, it's called a to'eva. To'eva, as I said, is very strong language. Most of the time you're going to find rabbis going off on preaching about different to'evot. This they tend not to get on all excited about. This is a to'eva. Which is the same way that there's moral, really upset, let's put it that way, in terms of certain things are called a toiva. This is called a toiva, and this, as I said, does not get enough press, as it were. That this is the connection with the mitzvah to go and attack and destroy Amalek, to me is fascinating. There's a very famous Reb Chaim, which, I don't know, it was a famous Reb Chaim, but the Rav certainly made it very famous. He quotes it a couple times, sometimes from Reb Chaim, sometimes from Rav Moshe, from his father, but it apparently goes back to Reb Chaim. And this is the idea that, this is based on a Rambam, this is the idea that Amalek can be an idea and not just a genealogical, thing. So therefore, anybody who acts like Amalek, therefore has a halach of Amalek. If you start looking in Hasidic Sfarim, you'll find that they say, no, Amalek could be something which is internalized, and Amalek is the Yetzer Hara and anything you want. You know what? That whole Vard is not so bad when you look at the context over here, and you look at the way that Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching it. Which, and I'm going to go back again. The Torah could have just told us, read Parshat Amalek, the one which is by the war itself. When we read this over here, as I said, it seems to me to be quite interesting. Let's now go the other way around, and let's go look at the other parsha, the one which is in Shemot. So those of you who have Shemot in front of you, now you're good. It's in Perek Yud Zayin. Here again, we're going to look at context just to see where it fits in. So far, but I did want to say one more thing. this lo yirei Elokim, who's the lo yirei Elokim, makes a big difference over here. To say lo yirei Elokim is talking about Amalek, so what does then lo yirei Elokim means? They had no fear of God, and they're ready to come after us. Question is, why now? I mean, what happened now, specifically, that they want to come after us? Why are they here now? On the other hand, if lo yirei Elokim is talking about Am Yisrael, which is the direction, as I said, that I was hinting towards, that why would Am Yisrael be lo yirei Elokim? I mean, the phrase yirei Elokim is found a number of times in Chumash. It's interesting to look where it's used. But over here we find somebody is not yirei Elokim. What I said about the context over here having to do with the weights, that's not mine. As I said, the Mechilt already suggests that lo yirei Elokim is talking about Am Yisrael. We find among the Balei HaTosfot, a number of different Balei HaTosfot, making the connection with the weights already. Saying lo yirei Elokim, oh, that's the context over here. So I said, that's not mine. That's something which you already find among the Rishonim. The Yirei Elokecha is probably very important now. Once you realize this, just go back and trace and see where lo yirei Elokecha, yirei Elokecha, yirei Elokecha is used. Now, going into context over here, just again, remember where we're up to. Am Yisrael leaves Egypt. In Egypt, we saw ten plagues. We see the splitting of the sea. They don't have any food, so guess what happens? Bread starts falling from the sky. Other things start falling from the sky. We then run into a problem. It's not the first time we run into this problem. And the problem is a lack of hydration, a lack of water. So how do we solve this problem? So we go crazy. That's the way we solve the problem. We go crazy. Now, what we don't realize at the time is that indirectly, our complaining at this particular point is going to cause the destruction of the first and second Beit HaMikdash. Did I sound like I overstated that? And you look at me and say, what are you talking about? Well, it's very, very simple. Over here, God says to Moshe, take your staff, go over, and hit the rock. Later on, he's going to say, take the staff, but speak to the rock. Later on, Moshe's going to go over, take his staff, and hit the rock. Because he hits the rock there, Moshe's going to die. Moshe can't go into Eretz Yisrael. Moshe can't go into Eretz Yisrael, so what's going to happen? Moshe's not going to build the Beit HaMikdash. We have a tradition. Where it exactly comes from, I'm not completely satisfied yet. So far, I've traced it back to Or HaChaim, where the footnotes there say it's a Gemara in Sota, which doesn't really say it, and Megala Amukos, who doesn't cite a source, but apparently there's some kind of a source that says that had Moshe Rabbeinu built the Beit HaMikdash, it never would have been destroyed. Had Moshe Rabbeinu gone into Eretz Yisrael, then he would have been had a status of Melech HaMashiach. Right? Beit HaMikdash could not have been destroyed. So now I realize that the starting point of Moshe not going to Israel, okay, I said the starting point. What's the end point? The end point is because he hits the rock. What's the starting point over here? Starting point over here? Because this time God says, hit the rock. But why is Moshe in the situation in the first place? Because all the people are complaining. Why are all the people complaining? So we missed that. Why are all the people complaining? Because they're crazy. They're crazy. Okay, let me read the last couple of psukim. Again, this is leads up into the battle of Amalek. Vayikra shema mako masa umariva, right? Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Zayin. Al riv bnei Yisrael v'anasotam et Hashem leimor hayesh Hashem birkabeinu ma'ayim. People finally said, is God with us or not? You know, we hear it so many times in the desert. Why did God take us out? God took us out because he wanted to kill us. God took us out, he wanted to die. There are no graves in Egypt. I mean, all these things, right over here, right there, complaining. Is God with us or not? What's the very next pasuk after you ask, is God with us or not? The very next thing, Vayavo Amalek. Amalek, Asher Korcha Bederech. Rashi gives three different interpretations to Asher Korcha. One interpretation is, what does Korcha mean? Mikra, coincidence. You either see God's hand in everything, or you look at everything and you say everything is a coincidence. When they say, is God with us or not? So that means things are coincidence, things are not, there's not hashkacha. So now I go back and I ask my question, when it says, Asher lo yirei Elokim, they didn't fear God, so who is it talking about? When you read the battle of Amalek over here, and by the way, continuing to Moshe, lifting up his hands, not lifting up his hands, lift up his hands, all the people pray direct to God, and then they're victorious, they're not... So you realize now that Yirat Elokim may be far more important than we would have suspected beforehand. Vayavo Amalek. So now let's go again and go deeper. Why does Amalek come? Had nothing to do that day. Why does Amalek suddenly show up now? So let's remember something. What I'm about to say to you is based upon a Rav Tzadok in a Sefer called Yisrael Kadoshim. When Am Yisrael is ready to go to Eretz Yisrael, Amalek suddenly wakes up. It's like Rabbi Soloveitchik once said that if you want to know what has Kedusha in Judaism, you only have to look at one thing. You have to take a look at what upsets anti-Semites. Anti-Semites have an unbelievable sense of Kedusha. If something gets anti-Semites upset, you know that there's something important about that. Right? I mean, I'm just saying, it's as simple as that. Amalek seems to have this intuition that Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael is an unbelievable combination. They try to stop that. But let's go this a little bit deeper. You know, if I'm able to claim that the base of Mikdash is destroyed because people complained about water, so now I can go back and I can complain, and I can say, okay, so where did the whole problem with Amalek begin? What's the origin of it? So it's not right over here, Vayavo Amalek. If you go look on a map, we're no place near where Amalek lives. So why right now does Amalek suddenly wake up and say, ah, we have to go get them? So where does the whole story begin? Of course, the whole story begins with... Before. Where does it begin? With Yaakov and Esav. It begins with Yaakov and Esav, and again, it begins with a sale that goes bad. By the way, the words are exact same words even. But let me... I'll come back to the words, hopefully. Let's think about the sale that goes bad. Esav comes in, and Esav says, I'm going to die. I need food. Now, I want to pause here for 1 second and tell you something which I think is hilarious. You're not going to think it's so funny, but I think it's hilarious. Maybe I can try to convince you it's hilarious. Amalek comes to fight, right? Pasuk Tet over here. I'm sorry, I keep going back and forth, but... Kacha. V'yomer Moshe el Yoshua. Moshe says to Yoshua, why Yoshua? That's a really big question. Why Yoshua? Okay. Hold on to that. He says to Yoshua, "Bachar lonu anashim, go take men, v'tzei lechem b'amalek, and go fight against the Amalek." Now the next word, it's the same thing like we had over there, by lo yireh Elokim. There's a word here, machar, which is it's unclear. Actually, there's an argument in the Medrash about it, and it says this is one of the things that there's ein hachra. There's a machloket. Whether the word machar is the last part of the first part of the pasuk or the first part of the second part of the pasuk. So does it therefore say, Vayomer Moshe el Yoshua bachar lonu anashim v'tzei lechem amalek amachar, and go fight against the machar? Or did he say, go take men and go fight against Amalek? And then, I know what the trap is. Or, I'm saying the Medrash says, it's machloket. So, it's machloket, how to put the trap. So the fact is, you have the trap one way. And the other way is, machar anochi nitzav arosh hagiv'ah. Or tomorrow we're going to go up to the top of the tree. So which one is it? So I'm going to tell you now a klal gadol. Chazal already pointed this out. It's a klal gadol whenever there's a battle with Amalek. There's always going to be an aspect of tomorrow. There's always machar. There's machar in the Purim stories. There's machar in Shmuel. There's machar over here. There's always a machar. There's always tomorrow. The reason for this is that Esav or Amalek, they live in a world where they need immediate gratification. They're obsessive. It needs to be now. So if you imagine right now the scene, the battle scene, and I'm saying this is what I think is hilarious. If you imagine the battle scene, so the first part's sad. Am Yisrael is traveling and they're all, you know, upset in the water and where's God and whatever. And what happens then? The weakest parts of society get attacked. Amalek comes and attacks. So what happens after the attack begins? We close ranks. Right? We close ranks. We pull people back into the camp. We have a large camp over there. And Amalek is outside. What's Amalek doing? Okay, they got the war paint on. They got the drums. Right? The drums are going. And they're screaming, you know, come out and fight us. How did wars take place? It's all hand-to-hand combat. Which means if we don't come out, they're standing there and they're whipping themselves into a frenzy. And what does Moshe then say? If you take Machar in the first part of the Pasuk, tomorrow. And these guys are going nuts. Tomorrow, we'll come out and fight you tomorrow. I'm saying that's hilarious. What? Yeah, I'm saying, but it's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious because these guys are getting more and more worked up. We'll say tomorrow we'll come out and fight with you. We don't have time now. We're busy now. We have to have Marv now. We don't have time. We have Night Seder. Okay, there's no time for fighting. We'll try to work it into the schedule. Can't do it now. So I'm saying that's what? Sure, yeah, we can't do it. I'm saying that's what that. So that no, I'm saying that's why this is hilarious. Yeah. Correct. They don't have any choice but to wait. They want to fight us. What can they do? We close. They can't anymore. Again, they only went. They're cowards. What do cowards do? Bullies. What do? They go after the weak. So we pulled the weak in. So now what are they going to do? They're waiting. Come out. Come out and fight us. Moshe says, Yeshua, you'll take him out. Now let's deal with Yeshua for a second. No, we'll come back to Yeshua. You'll remind me. Make sure I don't miss it. We'll come back to Yeshua. First, before we come back to Yeshua, let's go to where it all begins. Esav comes in from the field, and what does it say about Esav? He says, give me food because I am... Which one? Ayef. Now that's real interesting now. When you see that when Am Yisrael is Ayef v'yageya, suddenly we become susceptible to Esav. Say that itself. How do we become susceptible? Because we became like Esav. How do we become like Esav? Give us water right now. We need water right now. What's going on? Where's the water? What's going on? Where's God? Whatever. We've channeled our inner Esav right then. We are Ayef. Their Esav comes in from the field. Give me food. Doesn't say because I'm hungry or thirsty. Why? Ayef. So it's fascinating. That's what the Torah says. Right? Ayef v'yageya. Okay, now let's continue. Esav comes in and says, give me food because I'm tired and I'm going to die. Excuse me, you're not going to die. Calm down. But what I'm saying, you just hear this obsessive personality. I need it now, I need food right now. So now, according to Chazal, that's the day that Avram Avinu died. So if that's the case, if you do the math, you'll figure out that Yaakov and Esav were both 15 years old that day. Which means that Avram Avinu had 15 years of these boys sitting on his knee, or maybe they got a little big for it at some point, telling them all kinds of stories, telling about the past. But most important thing that Avram Avinu has is a covenant with God, the Brisbane Absar. That's the most valuable possession that he owns. So he'll tell them about it. What's the Brisbane Absar? That one day you're going to have the land of Israel. But there's a detour to the land. What's the detour? You have to go down out of the country, be slaves for 400 years, work a little bit, and come back and get it. What kind of person do you think is not necessarily going to be interested in that type of a long-term investment of his energies? What? For Esav, this is the worst nightmare imaginable. What does it say about Esav? Vayivez Esav is a b'chora. He detests it. By the way, the same language is used when it talks about Haman. The same words are used when it vayivez to only kill Mordechai. Let me kill all the Jews. Which therefore gives you the suspicion that these things are somehow connected. What does Yaakov say? I'm going to give you a bowl of beans. What does he give him? You want to really think of it properly? He gave him a bowl of cholent. That's what it was. He gave him a bowl of cholent. Gave him a bowl of cholent, and he says that for this, you'll give me the birthright. As far as Esav was concerned, did he make a good deal or a bad deal? He made the best deal he ever made. He got rid of some... I don't know how to say... A comparison. It's like the Yankees getting rid of A-Rod. Okay, if that works, it works. It means, he said, he got rid of something he doesn't want, and he got a meal out of it. It's like, are you kidding? Just to write this off and to get rid of this obligation itself would have been the best deal he's ever made. He even gets lunch out of it? Like this is icing on the cake. So when does Amalek show up? Amalek shows up after Am Yisrael paid the 400 years debt, and now they're going to collect on it. Suddenly now Amalek shows up. What? You ripped us off. What happened? How'd you take this thing from us? Meaning, this is the point in the show. By the way, what else is interesting? When does Esav show up? As soon as Yaakov's ready to come into the land of Israel. Yaakov's ready to come in, suddenly Esav shows up. Where have you been all this time? You're going to come into the land? Because the land is the issue. If you want to go further, Am Yisrael, it's time to come back and build the second base of Mikdash. That's when Haman shows up. You want to go further, it's time to come back to the land of Israel again. That's when the Nazis show up. When it's time for Am Yisrael to come to Eretz Yisrael, that's when, as I said, this crazy sensitivity to Kedusha wakes up within Amalek. They understand Kedusha. They understand that the power of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, and every time we're supposed to be over here, that's when they start to go absolutely nuts. That's why Amalek is showing up at this particular point. Why Yoshua? Because they can come in and they have a wonderful moral claim. What's the moral claim? The moral claim is, do you know what terrible thing your great-great-grandfather did? The terrible thing that he did, he took away the birthright from our great-great-grandfather. Yeah. Did he want to get rid of it? Yeah. Did he give him some food? Yeah. Did he make this deal? Yeah. Was he happy about the deal? Yeah. But it's a terrible thing that he did. By the way, there was one other thing that he did afterwards, which you can also argue, What did he do? He went in and he dressed up like Esav, and he went and he took the bracha. So realize that the whole idea of dressing up on Purim comes from that dressing up. Because you can say, if only Yaakov didn't dress up like Esav, we never would have gotten into this trouble in the first place. Don't ask me who says this. I said it. Nobody else ever said it. But it's true anyway. Yaakov dressing up like Esav is where the real hatred will end up coming out. And we say, absolutely, Yaakov did the right thing. Absolutely, we're supposed to get this brachot. And therefore, we will continue to dress up. So if you're looking for a costume, you can dress up like Esav. Just hope that there's no... hope that there's no Chushim Ben Dan around. Let me take you out. Okay. So let's then continue. Why Yoshua from Yosef? Because Yosef can respond and respond in a moral way. Say, yeah, your brother gave you some food for the birthright that you didn't want. My brothers wanted to kill me. My brother sold me as a slave. I ended up going down. And you know how I got back at them? I gave them all food, and I gave them all jobs, and I gave them all homes, and I took care of them for the last 80 years of my life. Which means, a moral level, Yosef is able to counter any argument that the very wounded Esav can possibly say. Esav can say, oh, my life was so terrible because of my brother. And Yosef turns around and says, what? What? You spoiled, right? You spoiled, superficial individual. I'm the one who could complain. You don't see me complaining. That's why Yehoshua can go and defeat Amalek. That's why from Yosef can come and defeat Amalek. Because on the moral level, he has the upper hand. Good? So now let's go and continue. At that particular moment, when we go for the battle against Amalek, and I will point out that there are some places in Chazal that speak about a son of Yosef, some that speak about Binyamin. The key is that it's a son of Rachel. A son of Rachel has the ability. Because Rachel as well was just so kind and giving to her sister. Right? She can also, what it really comes down to is this personality to her, it really comes back to Rachel. So therefore, Binyamin as well has this ability to defeat. I mean, when the Gemara says that the Megillah says Mordechai lo yichrav lo yishtachaveh, he's not going to bow down. It's understood that it's the Arizal says this. We'll never bow down. Lo yichra, it doesn't say lo kora. Lo yichra lo yishtachaveh. He will never bow down. Why? The Arizal says because all the other brothers, when Yaakov did meet up with Esav, they all bowed down to him. The only brother that didn't bow down to Esav was Binyamin. Why didn't Binyamin bow down? Because he wasn't born yet. But therefore, the subservience on some level to Esav was there by all of them except for Binyamin, and that's why Mordechai is going to be the one from Binyamin who will ultimately be able to be victorious. This is a much deeper idea, but I can't say it now. So, this is a much deeper idea, but I can't say it now. So let's go back to the battle itself. I'll say a drop. Binyamin is eventually the place where the Beis HaMikdash is going to be built. The Beis HaMikdash is built by Binyamin because Binyamin is the one where all the brothers unite around Binyamin. Yehud is ready to sacrifice himself for Binyamin. Binyamin becomes the place or the person that unites all of Am Yisrael. And that's why the Beis HaMikdash is built on the portion of Binyamin, which means halavai. All the brothers should have united among Yosef, but they couldn't. That's why when Yosef meets up with Binyamin all these years, it says they cry. What did Rashi say? Oh, they cry with the Beis HaMikdash. What does it have to do with the Beis HaMikdash being destroyed? Which is, we all know that the Sinas Chinim is what destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. So the Sinas Chinim, that's where it was. That's where it comes out from. The Sinas Chinim destroys the Beis HaMikdash. When it says that Mordechai is Ish Yehudi, right, Hayav B'shushan Abiron, right? Mordechai Ish Yemini. So Ish Yemini, he's from Binyamin. But also Ish Yehudi. That mean, and the Gemara has a whole thing about this. Did he live in Yehuda? But he's from Binyamin. He lived in Binyamin. He's from Yehuda. His mother's from Binyamin. His father's from Yehuda. His mother's from Yehuda. His father's from Binyamin. The Gemara has all kinds of possibilities. But all that leave aside, the place that Binyamin and Yehuda meet is the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash, we're told in the Gemara, is on the place of Binyamin, and the Kodesh Kedoshim is on the place of Yehuda. The place that the two meet, that's the Makom Mikdash. Which means that it says that everybody was bowing down, kulam, right? Everybody was korea and mishtachaveh to Haman. One person didn't. There's one place of purity. That's Mordechai. But okay, I'll explain. Fine. I wasn't going to say this, but I'll explain. Everybody goes to the party, the Medrash says, except for Mordechai. He's the one place where purity is. There's a B'nai Yisachar that says as follows. He says it like seven different places. But if you look by Adur, you'll see it as well. This is where he likes, this is really, I believe, the main part. It says that if you look back in Gan Eden, by the Chet, every single one of the senses were corrupted. It says she listens to the words of the Nachash, she sees the tree, she touches the tree, she eats from the tree. Every sense was corrupted except for the sense of smell. The sense of smell was the only thing which was not corrupted. So therefore, when the Gemara asks Mordechai Minatori Minayim, what does Mordechai represent? Mordechai represents the Ketoris, the smell, Mar Dror. That is part of the incense, which means the incense is the place where there was no corruption. All sin, every place, but no corruption. Mordechai is the one who doesn't bow down. Mordechai is the one who's not part of the party, which means Mordechai is the one which is this place. Mordechai is Ishudin Ishimini. It's this exact place where the Beis HaMikdash sits, where the Kodesh Kodeshim sits. Mordechai represents the Beis HaMikdash, which means everybody else is off there in Persia celebrating the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The one person who doesn't go to the party is Mordechai. He's the one who doesn't bow down. He's the place where purity, where purity remains. There's a deeper point, which I'm not saying, which we'll see. I don't think I'll have time. Now, let's then continue. Let's go back. What's going on the next day? Machar, right? It's always the next day. The next day, we send down Yehoshua. Yeshua is going to be victorious. Moshe goes up to the mountain. Who supports Moshe? Two people, right? Aaron and Hur. Aaron is the one who will become the Kohen Gadol, which really is actually quite questionable. Why in the world should he become Kohen Gadol? And the other one is Hur. Hur is the one who will, the man who will be king. He's from Yehuda. Bitzala will come from him. David HaMelech will come from him. Hur is supposed to be the David HaMelech of the generation. Hur is supposed to be the Mashiach, not Ben David, of David. Bitzala builds the Mishkan, just like Shlomo builds the Beis HaMikdash. Hur, well, the last time we saw Hur, well, when he was standing on the mountain, last time we heard about Hur, as Moshe says, black and white, that I'm going to go up now. If there's any kind of issues, go to Hur and go to Aaron. We never hear about Hur again. So what does the Medrash say? The Gemara says, they come over to him and says, build for us an egel, make for us a god, do something for us. And what does he say? He says, over my dead body. So they say, fine. Hur gets killed. That's the starting point of the next thing that we'll look at, of the Cheta Egel. It's Perek Lamed Beis, Vayara Am Ki Bosheshmo Shilaredes Minahar. The people see that Moshe has delayed in coming down from the mountain. By the way, now start to think, if Moshe added a day on his own accord, did that have any impact on this? Would that be a reason to get confused in terms of the time? But the one thing which is important here is confusion. There is confusion right now. And where confusion comes from, I'll try to come back to. Vayakel am al aharon vayomor elav, kum ase lanu Elohim, come make for us a God. Now you all realize that's ridiculous. Kum ase lanu Elohim asher yelchu lefaneinu, ki ze Moshe ish asher lanu ba'eretz Mitzrayim lo yadanu mehayalo. Because Moshe, the man who took us out of Egypt, we don't happen to us. There's two elements over here that I want to focus on. One element is make for us a God, and the other element is Moshe, the man who took us out, lo yadanu. There's an assumption there in that statement. You hear what the assumption is? The assumption is we don't know what happened to him, so what's the assumption? That we have a right to know what happened to him. Right, that's the assumption. We don't know, because we should know. Meaning, if you didn't think that you had a right to know, then you wouldn't be bothered by the fact that you don't know. Does that all make sense?
Can you pick up on that they say we want a God to go to our,
which is fascinating, which is absolutely fascinating. I said that those are the two points. We want a God, and we don't know.
Literally, we want a God, because Moshe, the man.
Correct, correct. Men are fickle. No, enough of men. Let's get a God. But I'm saying, but there's something absurd about this, but I'm focusing on the second part as well, because I think if you put the two of them together, you suddenly realize the connection with something that maybe you would not have noticed otherwise. And what's that? And that goes all the way back to the Nachash, which of course takes us back to Haman as well, because Amin Ha'etz Hazeh, right? Haman is connected to the Nachash, Haman is connected to the tree. What is it that the Nachash says, Perek Gimel and Bereish, V'Nachash Haya Aru Mikol Chayat HaSadeh, Asher Asa Hashem Elokim, V'Yomer Le'isha, Afki Omer Elokim Lo Tuchlum Mikol Eitz Hagan, which is unfortunate phrasing, but it's probably true. V'Tomer Ha'isha El Nachash, right? You understand why it's true? You can't eat from all of them. What can you eat from? Every single one except for one. That by the way, that's Haman. Right? If I don't have everything, the one guy doesn't bow down to me, my whole life is destroyed. And now that my whole life is destroyed, I need to fix it right now. Which is why he goes off in the middle. In the middle, I got to do it right now. That's Haman. It's immediate. It has to be done right now. Can't wait till tomorrow. I mean, that's exactly, I can't wait till tomorrow. So instead you're going to walk into a king who's paranoid, who can't sleep because he's afraid someone's going to kill him, and you're going to knock on his door, and he's going to say, do you hear the fear in his voice? Who's outside? The man is terrified of people trying to kill him. Who's outside? That's not I wonder who's outside now. I mean, I just think about it. It's crazy. It's crazy what Haman does at that point. Haman's inability of waiting for tomorrow, this is what really seals his fate right then. Okay? I know. So, now he was also manic depressive. What else you want to know? He was also a megalomaniac. Excuse me? Hamin Ha'etz is right over here. God says to Adam, did you eat from the tree? Hamin Ha'etz? So if you hear, what does the Nachash say? Here, what does the Nachash say? V'tomer Isha el Nachash. No. Mikol Eitz Hagan Nochal, Mipriya Eitz Asher B'toch Hagan Asher Mar Lokim Lo Tochlu Mimenu V'lo Tigu Bo Pentumutun. You all know that something I'd added on over there. V'yomer HaNachash el Isha Lo Motumutun. You're not going to die. Which, by the way, happens to be probably true. Nachash speaks of much truth. Ki Yodea Elokim. But by the way, what tree are we talking about here? The Eitz Hadat Tov V'ra. What happens when you eat from the Eitz Hadat Tov V'ra? Okay, I'll say it again. What happens when you eat from the Eitz Hadat Tov V'ra? I know that the way to call it is Eitz Hadat. Eitz Hadat. It's not the Eitz Hadat. It's not the Eitz Hadat. What is it? The Eitz Hadat Tov V'ra. By the way, that's not really what it is either. What's it really? Really? What's it really? Eitz HaMavet. It's Tree of Death. That's what it really is. How do I know that? Because there's another tree there called the Tree of Life. By the way, if Adam were Jewish 100%, what would he have done? Eat Eitz HaChaim first, and then to laugh and say, okay, what are you going to do now? And this is not a joke, because after he eats from the Eitz Hadat, Tov V'ra, God says, I better get him out of there before he eats from the Eitz HaChaim. Eitz HaChaim is the real deal. Eitz HaChaim is the real thing. But, if it was called the Eitz HaMavet, who's going to go be eating it? That's why we have Madison Avenue. They go take stuff which is going to kill you, and they put a nice sign on it in order to try to think, get you to think that this is going to be the best thing in your life, that you need this. If you don't have this, you're going to die. By the way, this works really well on people. What? It works really well on people who again, obsessive, they need whatever. So over here, Ki Yodea Elokim, this is the Eitz Hadat, Ki Yodea Elokim, God knows. Ki biyomach lachem imenu benufchuinechem v'hayitem ke Elohim yodea tovara. When you eat it, you're going to be like God, which means the sin by the Eitz Hadat has two things with it. It's this thing about knowledge on the one hand, and this thing about becoming like God on the other hand. And now you read again, you read again about the sin of the golden calf, and suddenly those same elements are staring right at you. Let's make a God. What do you mean? Let's make a God. That's ridiculous. Let's make a God. No, God is God. You don't make a God. You can't eat a fruit and now be like God. By the way, according to the Zohar, what kind of fruit was it? According to the Zohar, according to the Zohar, it's grapes. Because what kind of fruit, eating from that fruit causes confusion between Tovara. Which means this is a tree of confusion. So when you see that Am Yisrael there is confused, you suddenly realize that, by the way, the confusion is so profound that we're standing there, and the truth is that we need to know now, we have a right to know, right? We're going to be, all of this is, we're acting like Amalek. A matter of fact, what does Aaron say? Aaron goes into a stalling mode. First thing he says is, okay, go home and tell all your wives and kids to bring their jewelry. By the way, as far as I'm concerned, that's a guarantee that it's not happening. Right? Go home. Okay, can I have those gold earrings or the diamond earrings right now? Like, what are you talking about? The fact that they give it shows absolute mass hysteria. I'm saying that's crazy. Or maybe they grab it from them. I mean, there are lots of midrashim say that the women didn't sin at all. But I'm saying, in my mind, there's no question that Aaron over here is going into a stall tactic. Let me read the words. Vayomer aleihem Aaron perku nizmei hazahav asher baznei neshechem b'neichem v'notechem v'yaviu alai. V'yitperku kol am nizmei hazahav asher baznei v'yaviu al Aaron. Like, immediately. V'yikach mi'adam v'yitzarato b'cherd v'yaseyu. V'yaseyu is plural, by the way. V'yaseyu, they made. Egil masecha v'yomru. Which, by the way, is absolutely crazy. You just made this damn thing. What are you talking about? This took out of Egypt. Again, it makes no sense at all. Vayar Aharon, Aaron sees this. And this is where it says he sees. He sees what they did to Hur. So he says, okay, as you like. Vayar Aharon, vayivan mizbeach, lefanov. He builds a mizbeach. Vayikra Aharon, vayomar, chag lahashem, machar. We'll have a holiday tomorrow. So first of all, you realize how sad this is? You all now know where he got this tomorrow idea from. The last time he saw raving lunatics, right, with the war paint on, and let's go, and let's go, let's go, let's fight, what does Moshe Rabbeinu say? Sure, tomorrow. Sure, tomorrow. Because he thought the delay, bring your wife's jewelry, that's it's over. I don't know who they're married to. I know who I'm married to. This is not happening. So he thought that was it. He just thought he needs to delay. Moshe's coming down. He believes. He knows Moshe's coming. Okay, not today. Tomorrow. He knows Moshe's coming back. So what happens? They bring it immediately. So then what does he do? And isn't this frightening now? You hear him talking to them the same way that Moshe is referring to with Amalek, which means the Cheta Ego, we became like Amalek. I'm saying that's really what's so tragic over here, is that we're acting, so Aaron goes and he treats us. Chag l'Hashem machar. What's the Hashem? Yud kei vav kei. This is not make for us a God. This is Yud kei vav kei. Chag l'Hashem machar. And that, by the way, is the real tragedy of the Cheta Egel. The real tragedy is that Aaron was 100% right. It was supposed to become a holiday. What holiday was it supposed to be? So what day was it? He goes up. Moshe goes up on Vav, this is Yud Zayin. It's Yud Zayin when Moshe comes down. It's Yud Zayin B'Tamuz. So what holiday was it supposed to be? I mean, you know the Pasuk in Zechariah says that the day will come, that the fasts of the fourth, fifth, whatever will become holiday. What holiday is supposed to be? You're missing it. What are the people doing? What are the people doing? It says they're eating and they're drinking, right? It says, Achlu v'shatu v'komu l'tzachek. L'tzachek, Rashi says, is Gili Arayos. Right, v'tzachek, like we saw in Bereishis a couple times that tzachek has a connotation of Arayos. They killed Chur, Shvichas Damim. They're worshiping the Egel Avodah Zar. Kamal tzachek, Gil Arayos, which means, but that's pretty good. It's not easy. All three major sins right there, one place, by the foot of Har Sinai, waiting for Moshe Rabbeinu to come down. What are they supposed to be doing? It says, Achlu v'shasu v'kum l'tzachek. They're supposed to be eating and drinking and celebrating. What are they supposed to be doing? They're supposed to be celebrating. And they're dancing and there's all... It's supposed to be Simchas Torah. I'm saying the most posh is the Simchas Torah. Which means they got everything right except for one little thing wrong. What was the little thing they got wrong? They were supposed to be dancing around Moshe Rabbeinu with the Luchos instead of dancing around the Egel. Okay, little things. You have to be careful sometimes to know what to dance around. Little thing. I'm saying it's unbelievable when you think about it. Aaron is saying this is going to be a holiday in the future. It's emes. It's emes what Aaron is saying. Chag l'Hashem machar. Unfortunately, which machar? That's Am Yisrael. Am Yisrael, generally, we're long-term investors. You know, the guys that lose their money in investments, is as soon as it moves down, they pull out. So what happens? They keep losing money as they move along. We put in, it's going to go down, going to go up, going to go down, go up. We're in it for the long, we're long term. We have a long term strategy. We can go and invest in a 400-year slavery situation. Over here, Aaron says, Chag L'Hashem Machar. Okay, in the future, we're going to have a Chag. It's not going to happen now. In the future, when Mashiach comes, we're going to get to a situation that this is going to turn into a holiday. Which holiday will it turn into? It's going to turn into Simchas Torah. This is the real Simchas Torah. But unfortunately, what was it instead? Unfortunately, it becomes the day that Moshe broke the Luchos. The day that Moshe breaks the Luchos, something which is Etzbe Elokim, something has total holiness. Think a second now. Visualize it. Rocks that have total holiness, Evan that is total holiness, will be shattered on this day. Is it a surprise that the walls of Jerusalem, which have holiness, are going to be shattered on this day in the future? Which means the power of the destruction comes back from this. As a matter of fact, the 40 years in the desert, Rashi says something very surprising if you never saw this Rashi. Rashi says the 40 years in the desert were not for the sin of the Meraglim. Rashi says it was for the sin of the Egel. But the Egel, they got a suspended sentence. Olav Machshav, he was going to, right? And then he gave him suspended sentence. When they sin again, then he says, okay, now you get it. Which, by the way, is really frightening because it comes out according to Rashi that the punishment for the Egel was the 40 years, which means we didn't get the punishment for the Meraglim yet. Just start to think about that. That's really what emerges from this Rashi. Which means we're going to end up being in the desert for 40 years. What happens with the desert for 40 years? At the end of the 40 years, a new generation, Moshe, instead of talking to the rock, is going to hit the rock. What's going to end up happening? Moshe's not going to enter Eretz Yisrael. Which means the detour begins right now. The detour already began before. The detail began before Amalek comes. The detail is what brings Amalek. You understand? The detour is what brings Amalek. Is God with us or not? Okay, that's it. Amalek shows up. You think everything is Mikra? You think that everything is a coincidence? Amalek believes in Mikra. Amalek believes that everything's coincidence. So Amalek then comes and shows up. What's going to end up happening? We're going to end up happening just like Amalek behaves. We're going to end up behaving like Amalek. We behave like Amalek. What ends up happening? We end up getting a 40-year sentence. That's it. We're not going directly to Eretz Yisrael. Moshe's not going to lead us in. Moshe's not going to build a base of Mikdash. The base of Mikdash is destroyed. There's going to be a second base of Mikdash. I'm just saying. All this is flowing. Is coming from this point, right over here. That something really, really wrong happened. And the answer is, what really wrong happens is that we were Oyef. We acted like Esav. We were tired. We wanted immediate satisfaction. We want to know where Moshe is now. We demand to know right now where Moshe is. What do you mean you demand to know right now where Moshe is? We have a right to know. Make a God. What are you talking about? So that I'm saying you start to realize all these things. So again, the first base of Midrash ended up getting destroyed when the people are guilty of Gilui Reish, V'chasdam Avodah Zarah. How does all that happen? Well, we did it all there, right there at that place. We did it at Har Sinai. So of course, we have the ability of ignoring holiness when it's standing right in front of us. So what happens on Yom Kippur? So on the first year in Yom Kippur, which means this is Shavuos B'Tammuz, we move off to Elul. Moshe goes up for 40 days, comes down in Yom Kippur. V'salachti kibarecha. Yom Kippur, the people are forgiven. Yom Kippur, we're given the tzivui to build the Mishkan. The Mishkan. Why do you need a Mishkan? Because you're going to be in the desert for a while. If you go straight, this is pshat. If you're going to go straight to Eretz Yisrael, you don't need a Mishkan. Why don't you need a Mishkan? Because you're going to build the Beis HaMikdash. You don't need a Mishkan. You only need a Mishkan if you're going to stay in the desert for a while. So now I need a Mishkan. Right?
But they even when they got to Eretz Yisrael, it took them many years.
And if Moshe Rabbeinu led them in, you think it would have taken that long?
Why not? They still have to fight the
war. And I'll say it again. If Moshe Rabbeinu led them in, you think it would have taken that long? So come on. 450 years it took them. It's crazy. That's crazy. I'm saying, you start thinking how long it took. Yeah, there are wars to fight. 450 years? It's a long time. If Moshe leads them in, it doesn't happen that way. That's going to say it again and again and again. The fact that Moshe doesn't lead it in, that's where the problems begin. That first year in Yom Kippur, Moshe comes down with the new Luchos. They're not the same as the old ones. He comes down with the new Luchos. At that point, we need to start building a Mishkan. And I'm saying right there where you hear the Mishkan, if you really have sensitivity, this isn't a great thing. Oh, great, God's going to send his Shekhinah down to earth. No, this is a bad thing that we have to build a Mishkan in the desert, because what this really means is that everything now is going to move slower. Why is everything going to move slower now? Because we were moving too fast. We were moving too fast. We need it right now. Okay, let's slow down a little bit. We need to do some behavior modification. We need to slow down, slow everything down. You're going to be in the desert for a while now. Egypt wasn't enough. Let's slow everything down again. The following year, Aaron becomes the Kohen Gadol. And on Yom Kippur, by the way, it's fascinating. What were the sins that we did? Achila, Shtia, right? Tzchok, Gilui Reish. So when Yom Kippur comes, what are the laws? You can't eat, and you can't drink, and you can't have relations. All the sins that we did by the Egel, those become the things that we can't do on Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur now becomes a tikkun for the egel. But of course, on Yom Kippur, it's not the real way of serving God. The real way of serving God is what we should have done. What should have we done? We should have had a Kabbalah Satorah. What should have we done? We should have a Simchas Torah. Which means if you really understand what Purim is about, Purim is a Kabbalah Satorah. So what happens on Purim? What happens on Purim? So we eat and we drink and we're merry on Purim, because Purim is, again, this whole idea of Purim and Yom Kippurim, which, by the way, anybody who quotes this and quotes it and says all kinds of nice vortluch about it, what I just now said is one of them. Well, if you actually look in the Tikkun HaZohar and see what it says there, it's on a whole other level what it says. So maybe I'll say that to you still. But Yom Kippur becomes the day which is the Tikkun for the Chet HaEgel. Aaron becomes Kohen Gadol. Why? Because he builds the Mizbeach for the Egel. Why? Because he just saw them kill Tchor. Aaron was willing to be makriv himself, to be makriv his neshama for Klal Yisrael. They shouldn't do more sins on their own. They kill him, they kill a Kohen Gadol, and they kill a Nasi in one day. What's going to be? Right? The psukim about this. Aaron is willing to sacrifice himself now. He'll do it himself. Alai, it's on me. You don't do anything anymore. Aaron now builds the Mizbeach. Chag L'Hashemach. Again, his strategy constantly is pushing it off, delay, but he takes it upon himself. Why does Aaron become the Kohen Gadol? Because he's willing to sacrifice himself. By the way, now if you want to go even deeper, and what I'm saying now is in Midrashim and could be understood, and I'm not the only one to say it, if Moshe Rabbeinu builds the Beis HaMikdash, it stands forever. If Moshe Rabbeinu builds the Beis HaMikdash and Am Yisrael sin in the future, Beis HaMikdash doesn't get destroyed. What happens? Am Yisrael gets destroyed. So therefore, the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash is to bring about kapara for Klal Yisrael. The ultimate kapara that it brings is when it gets destroyed. Because when it gets destroyed in order to save the people. Which means the whole point over here, going all the way through, ends up really with the Beis HaMikdash. And now let's go back to the beginning of the story of Purim. The beginning of the story of Purim is that they're all sitting and celebrating, eating the kelim, shonim. Which are these kelim? Kelim for the Beis HaMikdash. What's the party they're celebrating? The Beis HaMikdash is not being built. Sometimes people don't realize this, that the story of Purim takes place after they started to build the second Beis HaMikdash and they stop. So they start building it and they stop. Achashverosh makes a big celebration. So the Zohar, that I told you that people don't know what it really says, the Zohar says that what makes Yom Kippur Yom Kippur, so it says that in Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol puts on these holy clothing. What are the holy clothing? It says they're clothing of kapara. And it goes through all the begadim. It calls some of them from the right, some from the left, some are lavan from the right, some are the gold, whatever, from the left. Although notice he only goes in with the big day. Love one, he goes inside, Lifnai Vifnim, and it says, what Pasuk does it bring to talk about these unbelievable clothing? It says, Kamo, as it says in the Pasuk, the Tilbosh Esther Malchus. That's the Pasuk it brings, to talk about Kohen Gadol. And it says, and then he goes, Lifnai Vifnim, and again quotes a Pasuk from Esther about her going into the inner chamber to where the king is. So let me remind you something that you all know. What you all know is that whenever it talks about the Melech in the Megillah, it's talking about Kodesh Baruch Hu. When it says that Esther goes lefnai v'lefnim, the Zohar, and by the way, the next line says, and therefore Yom Kippur, and Purim is like Yom Kippur. Because you would think that Esther goes in, and maybe it's a little sordid, maybe she's going in, and maybe she's going to try to seduce him, and try to win him over, and try to save Am Yisrael. So what's the answer over here? Is that Esther, when she goes in, what the Zohar is saying, that when Esther goes in, she's going in with the exact same kavana. The exact same kavana that the Kohen Gadol has when he goes to do the avoda. If you make one mistake, that's it. The Kohen Gadol dies. If she says, if I make a mistake, whatever, she can die. Which means the Zohar is saying that Esther's the Kohen Gadol. Now, what was Esther's real name? It's not Esther. What's her real name? Hadassah. What's Hadassah? Hadassah has a beautiful smell. Which means Hadassah really is the Ketores. Which means that Esther really is the Ketores. When she goes in, Lefnai v'Lefnim, she's going in as the Ketores to go around, bring forgiveness for the Jewish people who sinned all over again by having the party by Achashverosh, by having the party. It's like the Chet HaEgel all over again. It's the Chet HaEgel. Again, it's the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash all over again. And that's where all this begins, because we're acting like a Molech, we're acting like Esav, we're sitting having L'chaim together with Haman, having L'chaim of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. But there's one person who doesn't, and that's Mordechai. And that's, like I said, that's we see outward. But the whole idea of Megillus Esther is legalot et Esther, to reveal what's hidden. Megillus Esther, to reveal what's hidden. What's hidden? Esther's the one who's hidden. What's the real Esther? The real Esther, she's the Kohen Gadol. She's the Kohen Gadol, and she works, she acts just like Aaron. She's willing to sacrifice herself for Klal Yisrael, and that ends up what's saving Klal Yisrael. What's the real idea behind this? The real idea behind this, ultimately, is going to be a real Kabbalah Satorah. But we'll go one step further. What does the Gemara say? M'chai v'nish l'fsumi b'puri ad lo yada b'inorhom l'varach Mordechai. Ad lo yada. To we're no longer afflicted by this need to know. We're no longer afflicted by the Eitz Hadas Tov Hara. We're no longer confused by the Eitz Hadas Tov Hara. We no longer think that we have the right to know and therefore make false gods. We don't have the right to know. We need there to be an emuna. We need to believe in tomorrow. Okay, things that today I don't understand today, I'll understand it tomorrow. That's the idea between the. That's the idea behind. Mechay v'nish l'psumi ad lo yada. The ad lo yada is absolutely connected to the Eitz Hadas Tov Hara and Moshe ish lo yada mehayelo. Now we get to the point. We don't know. Seder. We don't know. Okay. Have a good Shabbos and a happy Purim.